the way that I've talked to some of these policymakers, and I was like, well, if I handed you meth right now, you'd look at me like I was the most ridiculous thing in the world, and it's like, what the heck are you doing? Mm-hmm. That's exactly the same ideology that when you hand a drug, somebody who's heavily addicted, you hand them a test strip and say, you know, everything else that you just did to get this drug, now use some of it and cut off away and chip at it. You know, it's such an irrational idea.
I'm Flint Anderson, founder of PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need. I've been in recovery since 2001, and there isn't much I don't know about recovery. And my mission is to constantly tell the truth about addiction, to make the realities of addiction, recovery, and drug culture known, and to drive awareness and advocate change that ultimately saves lives.
And I'm Jason LaChance, a certified recovery coach with a passion for speaking with others and sharing their knowledge to help others seek recovery and maintain long-term sobriety. And this is the Don't Hide the Scars podcast, presented by PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need.
Welcome to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast. I'm riding shotgun today, founder of PAIN, Flint Anderson, sitting to my left, and we have an esteemed guest. Yeah, you guys make me look like a schlock. I look like I'm going snowboarding or something today. Mr. David Tangipa, thank you for joining us.
Tangipa.
Tangipa. Yeah. So you've been saying it wrong.
Tangipa.
Tangipa.
Tangipa. Now I got it. I've been corrected. But thank you for coming in and sitting down with us. You know, Flint's been telling me about you. A lot that you're running on, and so it's always great to have conversations, especially with younger folks in the community that are looking to make a difference, you know, because we are your senior, both of us. So,
yeah. No, David, welcome. We're glad you're here, man.
Thank you.
I've been talking about you now for at least a year, right? I think I met you about a year ago.
Almost 2 years now.
Has it been 2 years?
2 years, because it was part of the reopening of CAP.
That's right.
Where we first got together.
That's right. And no, just love what you do. And so why don't you just give everybody a little background on you and, you know, tell us what David's all about.
Well, of course. But the first reason why I had to correct on my last name is because technically the way you said it is a bad word in Tongan. So if I hear any of my... Oh, yeah. It's... and Coach Tedford, when I used to play football for Fresno State, said it the same way in Hawaii, because I caught a touchdown in Hawaii, and all of my Tongan family were like, he said a bad word on TV. And so it's Tangipa.
Tangipa.
So it's because the other way is the male appendage. So just to let you know.
That's funny.
Yep.
That's funny.
But yeah, you know, I'm David Tangipa. Obviously, we've met in a couple of things of what we're doing here in the community. But just a little bit about myself. Born and raised from North Highlands, that area. I grew up right across the street from McClellan Air Force Base. Back in the 90s to the 2000s, they shut down the base. The area became really dilapidated. And so, but my mother's an immigrant from the island of Tonga. My father's a 100% disabled veteran. The reason why we stayed that close to the base was so that he could use the VA services. And then, you know, you grow up in a community like that, and it was a community that's very similar to Atwater, when Atwater had Castle. Mm-hmm. They shut down Castle.
Right.
You know, that's where I live.
Yep. So, yeah. And they shut down Castle, and you saw kind of, I mean, you lost a lot of jobs, thousands of thousands of jobs. But not only that, the income that was supplemented for just the general area that they would spend in businesses and stores and just the amount of support that they would give to high schools, all of that. The exact same bill shut down a Air Force base in North Highlands. And so the area was really, you know, beat up, run down. You know, you grew up in a lot of these hard conditions, like especially in that early 2000 period. And then I just remember why I wanted to be involved in politics and policy and all this, because my father's a, you know, he's kind of a hard-nosed military guy, and I'm like four or five, 6 years old, something like that, and I'm like, well, what happened to all the stores, and where did all my friends go, and why is everything all beat up? And he was like, well, that's what happens when you don't get in policy, and you know, he's listening to Rush Limbaugh, and we're not playing any music other than the Beatles is all he wanted to listen to, and or it's either the Beatles or Rush Limbaugh, and that was, you know, you get two choices in that.
What a dichotomy in your childhood.
Yeah. Well, and then my mother's, you know, doesn't speak English, and she's from the islands, and so I've got, my father is, you know, he's a white guy from Seattle, and my mother's as Polynesian as can come.
Right.
And, you know, the easy way to paint the picture is my father was in the Navy and my mother's an island girl.
Right. There it is.
Those Navy guys always find somebody like that, and that's how I'm here today. You know, and then but growing up in a community like that, really dilapidated, beat up, you know, I saw athletics and football as part of my way to get out and to take the next step and to make, you know, make a difference in my life. And so I started playing football, had the opportunity to walk on to Fresno State football because I really wanted to play at a Division I program, a full Division I. Derek Carr was just there.
Right.
You know, Devontae Adams was just there. And, you know, that opportunity to do that, quickly realized I wasn't an NFL guy. We have 17-year-olds coming in at the same time, benching 500 pounds and squatting 700. And right. You know, that guy's on the fringe being a drafted guy. I'm not even close to that. So I really focused on education. And I got my degree in political science, criminology, a legal studies certificate. I got really wanted to go to law school, but, you know, graduated early, had the opportunity to continue with football, paying for it. I had earned a scholarship at that time. And I got my real estate license because I really wanted to help people break generational poverty. The easiest way to do it was through home ownership. Mm-hmm. And then I got my master's in marketing, just because when it comes to telling a story and all of this is where we could really connect with people. And now started doing that. I've done almost $20 million in sales on the real estate end. I wanted to be more involved because I go back to that conversation with my father. I know policy changes people's lives. I know policy is how you can be involved where if you want to make things better, if you want to do some things different, you got to be involved.
Right.
You got to be in the arena. And started working with Supervisor Nathan Magsig, Fresno County Supervisor. And yeah, that was 1 week before COVID. So I said I wanted to be involved, probably not that much. But it, you know, that came really down the pipe. And so we just started working. A lot of people were confused at that time and, you know, really just started pushing like, hey, let's be a megaphone where the public can hear from public servants, you know, people who are elected. And so started developing on social media, direct outreach, all this other stuff. Within that same year in 2020, the Creek Fire happens,
right.
Which is California's largest single fire still. But from a fire itself, I mean, it's now the third because the Lightning and Dixie Fire the next year beat that out. And both of those were over 1 million acres. And so I've gotten involved when it comes to, I tell people this, look, I know how to fit the end of the world pandemic issues. I know the fire issues and emergency response force management. Look, I've written ordinances when it comes to drought, and then the exact same next year, I've written ordinances when it comes to flooding. You know, and when people are asking me, am I experienced? Am I ready to go as a younger individual? I was like, I don't know if there's anybody out there that has more that can right. still deal with a lot of these. And so,
especially with the conditions about that we face here in this area, you mm-hmm. know, it's. And you bring up the very valid point of COVID, and we met prior to COVID, right? I've known you, gosh, a good 4 or 5 years almost, but, you know, not really seeing in this gentleman to my left becoming my mentor and like, hey, when this fentanyl thing started being talked about like it should have and the voice that was saying it a decade ago, you know, started to get it out there. I mean, it's good to have people in the community that are in a position to affect policy and those changes and help people getting vocal about this because mm-hmm. we're just continuing to lose more and more people. And if what was working, we wouldn't see that rise in overdose deaths continue to climb.
Yep. Yeah. And it's something like growing up in North Highlands, there was a lot of drugs, gangs. I grew up in off of the number one street in North Highlands that had to deal with prostitution and gang activity, Watton A Street. I used to work at a McDonald's that was on the corner there. And, you know, right before anybody started walking the streets, they'd always come in, you know, they'd get something you would see. I had friends that, you know, involved in different things because that was our environment. But it's where I've seen that there's been a huge shift from what it was before. I was protected by that community because I was good at athletics and I was mm-hmm. really good at school and there used to be a code. Mm-hmm. Now I just don't know, like especially with fentanyl, you know, dealers never wanted to kill anybody before, but now they're opening because if you're killing your clientele.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was the mantra of, you know, if you grow up in the hood or if you grow up in an area like this, don't kill your clientele.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would say that, but now it's fentanyl's killing everybody. You know,
well, and they're doing this because they have more people behind the person that died that's using it. You know, we still have such an a substance use disorder, if that's what you want to call it. But we have that. We have such an addiction issue that there are plenty of, quote, clients to go around. So the drug dealer doesn't care anymore whether somebody lives or dies. It's really that simple. And it's those simple things that, again, I believe that Sacramento doesn't get. They're not understanding the addict. They're not understanding addiction as a whole. All they see is, you know, fentanyl coming across the border. Again, law enforcement doing the very best that they can, you know, to stop that flow of drugs from coming in. But right now, it's like pushing the ocean back with a broom, is what it is. And obviously, you know, you talk about policy, and I think a lot of this starts there. It starts with our leaders in Sacramento, starts with people like you that are going to come in and say, okay, what is an actual solution here? We can talk about awareness all day long. We can talk about, yeah, this is a problem. But we've been talking about this problem now for a number of years. There are solutions out there for both the importation of fentanyl come across the border, and there's certainly solutions out there for treatment. But until Sacramento wants to listen to those of us that know, I just don't think it's going to happen, and that's why we got guys like you that want to come in and change California and change Fresno and the Valley.
Well, I think the biggest thing is we have an accountability issue. You know, there's been a big push on, hey, it's not your fault. It's because of your adverse child experiences. It's because of this. It's because of this. So we've lost the sense of it's okay to fail. You know, there isn't always a reason or something else or someone else that have caused you to fail, because then we get in this mindset of being stuck. You know, I look at my position. You know, I grew up in the same conditions as a lot of friends, families, and different individuals. And if we're waiting for somebody because it was somebody else's fault while we're in this position, nobody's coming to save us.
Yeah.
And it's where I've looked at with what's going on in Sacramento, and just I've really looked at that ideology, and it's just the, in my opinion, it's the weaponization of compassion. You know, that sometimes that they really don't see that they feel very altruistic on the point of, well, I care about that person. You know, we all know parents or different individuals that it's like you have a son that they're an addict. I have family members of mine heavily addicted. And you can care a lot, but you have to do the hard things.
Right.
And that is what we are avoiding right now, is having the hard conversations and saying, and that's putting individuals who use in some positions that lock them away from the world so that they can understand that, because I believe Sacramento, they look at it and it's like, oh, you want to control that person. You want to do these things. They need a controlled environment.
Correct.
They need the assistance. We Sacramento, the way I've described it, they're the cool parents.
Right.
Yeah.
They're the cool parents who their kid's 16 years old and, you know, hey, here are the keys to the car. I know you're going to a party with drinking and all of that. So, but if you're going to drive, like, take care of this. That's the way that they talk to these individuals. And but that puts their lives in danger, and that's where they can drive. And you're telling a 16-year-old that, you're telling a drug dealer, hey, you know, if you're going to do it, go outside. You know, if you're going to do it, go to the garage.
Right.
Yeah.
I've heard those conversations personally. Yeah. You know, I've seen it personally, and no, it's not okay. You do not do that in my home. I won't allow you to be on the streets. But this is what we're going to do. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to put you somewhere that can take care of you, because that, having those conversations, what I always tell people, if you can't be truthful and honest with somebody on exactly what needs to be done, you actually don't care about them.
Right.
Yep.
You actually don't
care
about
them. You're absolutely right.
And that's what we've lost. These individuals look at just, well, but they're, you know, they went through this, and so that's why we have to embrace them with this style. But we know that the mentality is not there for them to do it. It's at a point where they're just like, whatever you want to say, give it to me, I'll do whatever, and I'll go, because I know no matter what, you're still going to be the nice person, the person who cares, the person who does that.
Yeah.
But you're not the person who's going to have the hard conversation to say, get your life on track. You're not going to be the person to say, I'm going to put you in this position. I'm going to make sure that there's a way to seal you away so you can go through the withdrawals that are going to hurt.
It's a lot of the virtue signaling, and I agree with you. Flint knows, and the listener knows, that nothing gets me more fired up than that of the attitude of, well, we're just letting them live. You're not letting them live. You're leaving them in a place to die and never truly live life.
New Perceptions North, the premier drug and alcohol treatment and recovery center in Central California. A full continuum of medically supervised top quality care with programs for detox and patient residential treatment with dual diagnosis, intensive outpatient treatment, sober living support groups, and more. New Perceptions North provides adult men and women with the highest caliber of professional health care, treating each client with compassion and respect. In a safe, comfortable environment to begin the process of recovery, to proudly create and sustain a life without addiction. Call 559-978-1507 or visit newperceptionsnorth.com.
But we have to have those hard conversations like you're saying. Because if we don't, we're just continuing to do a disservice. I mean, it's the ideology of this world, how we'd like it to be, or it's the reality of how it is. You know, and I don't know. I don't know how we continue to bridge that gap or get people to take it a little more, just take it serious. This is real. This is life and death.
Well, the question I always have is why isn't Sacramento taking this more serious? It appears to me to be this. We all want to do what's right. We all care. I don't think there's people out there that just simply don't care about this issue. But how much time and money and effort are we going to put in to putting a don't do fentanyl sign at Blackstone and Shaw, or to put that sign on a bus stop bench somewhere, where today, and I'm just going to say it, it's not having an effect any longer. There are so many people still talking about the awareness piece of this. And again, we have to keep that going. I'm not saying we don't. But nobody, again, is having the hard conversation about how do we change the treatment industry to get help to these folks? Because treatment is split into two ways. It's split into those with PPO insurance and cash that can afford it, and then it's in the government insurance, Medi-Cal, or those that don't have any money. And when we don't have it, when you have millions of dollars going into county budgets for substance use disorder and mental health, and you have only enough beds to service anywhere from 50 to maybe 100 clients. And that's a big maybe. Nobody's got a 100-bed facility.
Yeah. San Francisco has what, 57?
57 beds for a $569 million substance use disorder budget.
And 25,000 practicing addicts.
Correct. Those are staggering numbers. I don't know exactly what Fresno County's numbers are. We're going to find out what those are. And when you have systems in place that when you call, they don't even talk about detox or inpatient treatment. They talk simply about outpatient treatment for full-blown opiate addicts or anybody with any addiction. We all know in the treatment world that doesn't work. That's putting less than a Band-Aid on an issue. So A, I would like to know where the money is going, and B, how can we take that money and put it into the treatment side of this thing to where we are actually helping somebody? And I know somebody may say that's just pie in the sky thinking, right? But I don't think it is. Like anything else, we have to take the funds that we have and we have to put them to good use, instead of basically taking them and taking a match to it.
No. Well, I mean, you're exactly right. We need to be results-based.
Yes.
Not just financially based. I mean, it's just saying like, oh, there's a problem, let's throw this much at it. Right. No. There's a problem, let's see the results. Let's look at the data. Let's look at the numbers that work in different countries. I spin my wheels when I talk about like California is like they're trying to be innovative when other countries and other areas have already done the policies that they're talking about and failed, changed them around. Let's not recreate, let's not recreate those issues. And so, but especially when it comes to like addiction, we know what is currently happening right now is not working.
Right.
But you're 100% accurate. I don't know a single person out there that isn't a user, that isn't afraid of fentanyl. Don't touch me with fentanyl. I don't want anything near me. I mean, I remember when I had my knee surgery and they're like, oh, well, you know, fentanyl and all this. I was like, whoa. Look, I'm in a lot of pain, but can I just maybe half a Vicodin or something
like
that?
Yeah.
Because there's not a single person that I know that isn't a user or anything else that isn't terrified of, oh, is there fentanyl in that?
Right.
You know that people know. They say the words fentanyl. They're like, I don't want to be anywhere remotely close.
Right.
The awareness is already there.
It's already there.
Now it's actually addressing the issue. And so there's a larger scale issue to this that a lot of people kind of avoid. Almost all of the fentanyl is coming from China.
Yeah.
You know, and people need to realize the main reason why that it's coming from China is actually they remember the opioid crisis that was created in the opium wars
in the
1800s. And China right now is on their revenge tour. Revenge tour because Great Britain did a huge, huge disservice that poisoned their entire community. And now there's a very strong Chinese nationalist energy to it. And one of China's number one terms is, we remember.
Mm-hmm.
We remember. Mm-hmm. We remember what happened, with the opioid crisis.
Right.
We will get our revenge on and for them, it's revenge is on the Western society.
Correct.
And if we're part of the Western society, and there's a reason why. If the opioid crisis destroyed China for almost 100 years, well, then the opioid and fentanyl crisis will destroy America for over 100 years. And they remembered those things, and they set up policies. I studied abroad in Australia, mm-hmm. where they've used economic policies with the Belt and Silk Road that they're doing right now on creating economic disparities in Nigeria, Australia, and these other countries. You know, they'll build it in 10 seconds. Then they put you on a loan and a 100-year lease and say, you have to abide by these terms. They default on the loan and then they break the terms and they'll move a warship in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or they'll seize the asset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're not going to go and take over the world through the military powers, but they'll do it through economic powers and civil and social unrest. That is why, I mean, I was just speaking to somebody on the border right now. 75% of the individuals who are coming across from Mexico right now were actually Chinese nationals.
Yeah.
75%.
That's unbelievable.
Less than 13% were actually Mexican. Less than 13%. He is at the border and just did a video for a media thing that he's going to release soon. 75% Chinese nationals.
That's scary.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and it's more of like, you know, if that's China's policies coming out of China, and this is, I mean, they're open about it. This is their revenge tour.
Right.
Yeah. And do I understand at least what they're looking at? Well, if that's the understanding that's their prerogative.
Yeah, I get it.
Well, then the biggest mission that we have to do is completely cut that off, just like what they did when, you know, they really wanted to fix the opioid crisis.
Right.
And they wanted to fix those crises.
Well, and what they did was, if I remember my history correctly, they literally locked up every opiate addict.
Yep.
Back then, I mean, and
they banned all Western imports.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. they did, and they just locked up the addict. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got rid of their problem pretty quickly. So along with that, it's again this whole awareness piece we've done a marvelous job at. Not only here in Fresno County, in the Valley, in the state, and across the country, we really have. But even the larger question is, how do we get this message in front of those in Sacramento? Because it appears that we can't do it by just walking into a public health and safety committee hearing. It almost needs to be one-on-one with each assembly person, each senator, each congressman, to where we have enough time to explain to these folks exactly what it's going to take.
Yeah. The biggest thing that is actually what we mainly need to do is, one, do that. Have those conversations. But then the other thing is find somebody who will run on, I will end fentanyl. Why? Because fentanyl has killed more Americans than the Vietnam War.
Correct. Yeah.
I will end fentanyl because fentanyl has killed more Americans than the war on terrorism.
Right.
I will end fentanyl, and in that coming through, we will make sure that we are having the conversations. And I don't care if they're Democrat, Republican, Independent, right. whatever. Then you have those conversations. If they tell you, hey, you know, they're the cool parent policies,
right.
you know, and it's like, I like to give my kids keys to the cars when they go to some party. And, you know, I know that there's going to be underage drinking. I know all of that. Well, that's the number one thing. Find and identify those individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Have the hard conversation with them. And if they're being, and I call them cool parent policies. You know, the cool parent policies are killing Americans.
Right.
Yeah. Cool parent policies are killing Californians.
Right.
You know, and that's what we have. And we need to call that out. And yeah. then the other address to that is, you know, the civic engagement needs to be on the rise again. We've actually lost civic engagement, especially here where, you know, most people, I'm running for the state assembly. A large question I get is, what's the state assembly?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I mean, no, you're right. People don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People are almost ignorant to the fact.
Well, thank you for what you said about China, because I'm going to send just that part to a friend of mine that calls me a conspiracy theorist. And I believe, too, that in addition to that has been the dumbing down through I forget the writer. We'll all entertain ourselves to death, or whatever the title of the book was, written maybe 100 years ago or mm-hmm. something like that. And it's a reality. We've been inundated, and China does inundate us with that, too. Mm-hmm. Kids, TikTok is a Chinese product.
It is.
I have friends that when they travel abroad, they get different content than they get here. Mm-hmm. They don't get girls in bikinis or other stupid stuff. They get things on education and all that different stuff. They're not only beating us there, they're educating the hell out of their youth.
You want to know what's one of the most scariest things that I was reading about? So I think it's it's like from 6 to about 14 years old. The number one occupation right now that they want to grow up and become is a YouTuber or influencer.
Right.
Right.
When if you went to early 2000s, the number one occupation that they wanted to do were lawyers, doctors,
right.
engineers. I want to be an athlete. I want to be all of these things. The number one in our demographic right now is an influencer and a YouTuber and all of that. I mean, yeah. That is the reality. And not only that, China, and it's not a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy because this game, this playbook, has already been played. Great Britain did it to China.
Absolutely.
China is doing it to America
yeah.
and Western society.
And how, yeah. and how, again, how do people not know this? Again,
we're spending too much time on TikTok.
Right.
TikTok's not going to let them know it.
Right.
Because
right.
it does
right.
a great right. job right. of creating discourse and division. There's a really great movie on Netflix that displayed this, and it was The Downfall, and it was those three steps, you know, create the discourse, create the...
Uneducate the society.
Uneducate mm-hmm. the society and everything else, and when this, you know, crazy power outage and people are turning on themselves, the guy on the East Coast is like, well, flyers were dropped, and they say that it was China.
Yep.
And then they call their friend on the West Coast and like, oh, we got it that it was North Koreans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and right now, we're wonderfully divided.
Yeah.
Wonderfully divided.
Yep. No, I mean, you're hitting it right on the head, because that's one of the first, it's a couple of things right now. You look at the state of affairs in California when it comes to the education standard. We're 50 yeah. out of 50 when it comes to literacy. Right. We can't even read.
Right.
You know, and we're 46 out of 50 on math and science. And so if I'm trying to tell somebody about the data and I slide them a pie chart, what's the difference between sliding the Mandarin?
Right.
I mean,
they're not going to know.
They're not going to know. Right. And then having these general conversations with people, again, there was another study that was put out that it basically showed that 70% of news readers are actually just headline readers.
Yeah.
They'll read
yeah,
a headline,
yeah, yeah.
and then they'll derive their opinion from just a headline. Oh, new study shows, you know, mm-hmm. this, and they don't actually look at the data. They don't know who conducted the study. They don't know any of that. And that's just because we're in a society right now where things are moving so fast and the overload of information.
Mm-hmm. You know,
But the average everyday person just wants to go home, have a beer, hang
right.
out with their family, you know, do their own thing, go to work, and it's that we are at a point right now. It's like, when do people realize? And it's why I talk to people in the manner in which I did. I was like, well, fentanyl's killed more people than Vietnam. Yeah. You know, fentanyl's killed more people than the war on terrorism. 88% of the overdoses in California are fentanyl deaths.
Absolutely, they are.
Yeah. You know, and
along those lines, I don't think we've touched on this one yet. I can't remember yesterday anymore. But you know, when you're talking about fentanyl overdoses, I do want to address that for a second. This again is what Sacramento doesn't understand, and most people don't understand. There are very few accidental overdoses anymore. Mm-hmm. Very few. I am a recovering opiate addict. When you are an opiate addict, we are seeking out the drug of our choice. And when fentanyl is our drug of choice, we are going to seek that drug out. We want that drug. We need that drug. We need it in our system so we don't get, again, what we call dope sick. We are not going to waste our money and at all on a fentanyl test strip, because what are we going to do? If we have one pill, think about this, if we have one pill left or one pile of fentanyl left, do you think we're going to waste that on a test? Of course not. The first thing we're going to do is get it in our body. So this whole fentanyl test strip, the only thing that is good for is for that casual user. Again, I'm not promoting casual drug use, but for that casual drug user on a Saturday night that's doing cocaine, that needs to check their cocaine to make sure that there's no fentanyl in it, then the test strip has a place. But for the addict to even carry a fentanyl test strip, we're not going to do that.
You're asking irrational individuals that are addicted to drug to make a rational decision.
Correct.
And I think that's the attitude with a lot of, you know, the policymakers, is they continue to see—
And advocates, by the way, and
a good amount of advocates— That it's rational. Right. You're sitting with two men that know the irrational.
We are not rational in our addiction.
Right. I mean, it's that
assumption that their mentality is like, oh, I'll give you a test strip so that way you know that you don't have that. It's like they know that what they're actually taking and what they got was what they wanted.
We know the 2 milligrams is the line that is going to kill us. And if we are, you know, because again, these people don't understand, the more time you are addicted to a substance, the more of the drug you have to have. So even that 2 milligrams may not take care of that need that we have to have in order to not be sick and in order to get the high that we want to get off of it. Knowingly, we know 2 milligrams can kill us, but we are going to take the chance every single time. And to get that message out to people is one of the most difficult things I've ever had to deal with. And I want to say this for most parents out there. Look, nobody wants their kid to grow up to be a drug addict. None of us raise our hand and say we want to be a drug addict when we grow up. But in today's world, the chances of your child becoming addicted to a substance is probably somewhere around 70%.
Breaking my heart with that one.
You bet your butt.
Yeah.
Because everybody is using substances for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
We're not getting to the reasons behind the use. Hmm. Parents, again, there's no manual for this, by the way, when you're a parent. And then you look at the recovery rates in the United States. Recovery rates are 7%. There is no cure for addiction. Until everybody starts to realize this, I'm not cured. I didn't use yesterday. I didn't use today. I have no idea what tomorrow holds. I have none. Now, I doubt it very seriously because I've got so much time under my belt. But for those, do you know how many people relapse between that first year and that 4-year mark? It's astounding how many do.
Yep.
Very few. I know, and even personally, I know maybe 3 people that did not relapse in their first year.
Every time for me, it was between year 1 and 2.
You bet.
The 2 I had.
I have somebody that I care about right now. And he took care of me a lot when I was younger. I had this conversation with him all the time whenever I go back home. I always tell him, And it's a fun conversation, sure. even though I know what position that he's in again today.
Sure.
I'd always tell him that I, because he got me a job and he helped me and he knew and he bought into me even, you know, after he had, you know, been away for a long time. I would always tell him, I was like, you know, I like the fat version of you. Because I know when he was fat,
he wasn't using.
Right. You know, and right now he's and he's somebody that I consider like very close family. Because mm-hmm. I've had a lot of people that wrap their arms around me. And I still think about it today because he's about to go back in, you know, because he got charged for something else. And, you know, I always tell him, I was like, you know, I'm okay with you going back in. And I shouldn't have those conversations with him. And I don't know how much and how often I have to tell him that it's like, well, when you come back out, I'm hoping that you're 50 pounds heavier too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping you weigh 100 pounds more because I know I want you to be here.
Right.
You know, for my wedding, I want you to be here.
Right.
For your grandchildren, you know, like I want you to be at their football games.
Yeah.
And right now, in the position that you're in today, like how many more times, you know, how many more times you've already got two strikes. Yeah. You know, and they're not going to give you a third because California won't allow it. But,
right.
You know, and it's like. Like, I have that conversation with my family all the time because there's so many individuals, and it's that weaponization of compassion, you know, and these policies that just, I have these hard conversations with them because it's what's needed, yeah. You know?
It truly is
what's needed. And I had it just a couple weeks ago during the holidays because I'm getting married in June, and he told me that he didn't want to go because he didn't want to embarrass me, you know. And it's,
I know.
He's somebody that I consider close family,
sure,
you know. Yeah. And he's looking at it. He was like, "You don't want me there. You don't want me there." And I grabbed him. And I said, first off, don't ever say that.
Right.
Don't ever say that because you don't know how much I care about you,
right.
And how much you helped me when I was younger." Because he'd always say, you know, do as I say, not as I do. and they would always do that. A lot of the individuals, whether they're gang members or drug dealers or whatever else, they always saw. And I was part of the code. Protect that kid. He's going to do something different.
Right.
You know, and it's a big passion of why I'm running. And it's why, like, having those conversations where you're saying, man, I'm going through it right
you're
now.
That's okay. Right. That's okay, man. That'd be okay.
You ain't the first, and I tend to be the one crying.
Right.
So,
but it's the way that I've talked to some of these policymakers, and I was like, well, if I handed you meth right now, you'd look at me like I was the most ridiculous thing in the world, and it's like, what the heck are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the same ideology that when you hand a drug somebody who's heavily addicted, you hand them a test strip and say, you know, everything else that you just did to get this drug. Now use some of it and cut off away and chip at it. You know, it's such an irrational idea. Just like somebody who's never used. If I ask them, wait, here you go. Here's some meth. Here's some crack. Here's some everything else. You know, they'd look at you and like, what the heck are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
That is the same ideology when somebody who is so addicted that they're grabbing it. The moment you hand them a test strip, they're like, get out of here.
Right.
Do you know what I just did to get this?
Right.
Do you know who
right.
the things that I just did,
right.
whether it was stealing or sexual favors or different
Correct.
Things? It's like, and you now want me to chip off a piece and do this?
Right.
So that's what I asked. And it's getting that understanding behind that mentality. It's saying, it's like, look, you're asking somebody who's heavily addicted to now test, you know, their things.
Right.
Well, what if I asked you who's not heavily addicted to now do and smoke crack
right.
or do drugs? They'd be like, that's a ridiculous notion. That,
Same
and
thing.
I said, exactly. Your response to that is their response to it because it's also ridiculous the things that they just did
right.
to get this. It
right.
is a ridiculous mentality.
Right.
And the only way to fix it is one, hold criminals accountable.
Yep.
If they are dealing and if they are openly dealing fentanyl, they are murderers.
Correct.
You have to say, you call a spade a spade. If you are opening, you can't have over 80% of the overdoses be one drug and somebody openly selling that drug, that they are a murderer.
Right.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at painnonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at PAIN Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.
Well, and when we're losing the rate of a 737 every day to overdose,
yep.
And if that 737 went down due to some sort of weapon, you'd prosecute the weapon dealer that got it to him illegally, wouldn't mm-hmm. you? Mm-hmm. But yet we're treating it different for yep. whatever reason. I don't know if it's... I mean, it's like a friend and I were having a conversation that we should add apathy to the deadly sins because we're in a state of it. Just so apathetic. It's like, my God, what? Like, I don't know.
Cool parent policies.
I just don't understand where the outrage is.
Yeah.
I really don't understand where the outrage is.
Yeah.
You know, when you're a heroin addict, a pill addict, I could have gone 30 more years in my addiction. Heroin addict, I could have been in it for 50 years. Seriously. Meth addict, you're probably going to wind up dying of some other disease other than the meth.
Yeah.
Fentanyl, you have about a 10-month window of being alive. And now that fentanyl, it's just not the fentanyl that the addict is taking. It's laced with niacin. It's laced with other benzodiazepine, which is Valium. Klonopin, drugs like that, because it extends the life of the fentanyl out. So you don't have, because there that the life on a dose of fentanyl, you probably need to hit up about once every hour and a half in order to maintain the high and maintain the level of not being dope sick. So you have to keep buying it. So dealers now have mixed the benzo because it's longer lasting into the fentanyl. So but now that's two separate drugs. So now us in treatment have to deal with two separate detoxes on somebody because they're two separate drugs. And so when you're to properly detox somebody, it takes about 7 to 10 days for the drug to get out of your system. But just because the drug's out of your system, that's just the very tip. Mm-hmm. That's the very tip of the sword, because now you have to deal with all of the mental health issues that the drug caused. You have to deal, because we don't know how to live life. People need to know that addiction is as much as a behavioral situation as it is anything else. It's what we use, where we use, when we use, who do we use it with, what songs are we listening to, okay, when we're using. I mean, the list is long and distinguished. Mm-hmm. And so you don't change any of that behavior in 30-day programs, even if we're lucky to get 30 days out of an insurance client these days. Because now insurance companies, that's the other big topic that needs to be addressed, I mean, around the country. Because their job now is to cut down the amount of time that somebody is in a residential program. Used to be at least 28 days. Now we may be getting 17 to 23 days, depending on the insurance policy. So it's about doing treatment, but it's about doing treatment correctly. That's why there's such a revolving door. That's why there's so much relapse. That's why there's so much. And I hate the term failure. And people need to understand that addicts are not failures. This is not a moral failing. This is sure, a lot of times was it our choice? Yes. A lot of times it wasn't our choice. Medical reasons, whatever, mental health issues, whatever the case may be. But I've never really met an addict that I didn't like. And I'm so far right, it's not even funny, all right? But I tell you what, the compassion that I have for the addict and their families is beyond. Mm-hmm. And we have to have more people that understand both.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have people that understand both. because I am the hard ass. I am the one that will say, Mom and Dad, if your kid's not doing this correctly, you need to show them the door. Because love, butterflies, and unicorns is not going to fix this problem. Telling them, putting up a sign saying, don't do fentanyl is not going to fix this problem. It takes work and effort on everybody's part here to get this thing under control. Because we have a saying in recovery, we will always refund your misery. But we've got to get people starting to listen to us. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, and again, I'm not talking about the people that have 6 months of sobriety or the people that want long-term harm reduction and want to keep people on this drug and that drug, all right? Because what we're not doing is we're not talking treatment. We're talking maintenance.
Yeah.
And that needs to stop.
Yep. But I think you hit it right on the head, especially with just the societal structure.
Yep.
You know, if you can get clean as you want to be, but if you walk out of that door and you're by yourself, how high is the relapse on, you know, where's, yep. And it's you want to talk about a policy that just killed California was the early release program that happened in 2020.
Right.
These individuals, they couldn't call their families. They didn't know what was happening outside of the world. And somebody walked into their cell and there were individuals that we've heard from I was in prison and I had a couple extra years. I had 2 years, you know, it was a nonviolent crime. I got caught stealing a car, Grand Theft Auto, you know, and
right.
I was in there and I was getting my GED. You know, and I was going to school, and it was like, I get my life on track. And then they walk into the cell. I got 2 years left. Couldn't call my family. Couldn't do anything. How many people in your family are going to pick up and just say, yeah, you can move into my house, mm-hmm. and right. you can hear, you know, I know you're a locked up felon, and hey, you're saying that you're getting your GED. You're saying that you're doing all of this stuff, and you're getting your life on track. But, you know, we kind of heard that before. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, I got my own family. You can't live here. You know, and that person has to walk out of the cell and they're like, I don't have a bed. All of the
right.
all of the secondary homes are all stacked because everybody else who was received. I don't have any money. I don't have a place to go. I am now on the street.
So you know what we do? We go back to what we know.
That's yeah. the only thing they can do. And that's what
right.
he physically yeah. told us.
Right.
Physically told us. He was like, I didn't have an address, so I could apply for a job.
Right.
DSS and everything else was so, the Department of Social Services
right.
was so bogged down from everybody who was released at the same time.
Right.
And he was like, I either steal, which breaks their mentality again, of mm-hmm. I thought I was getting my life on track and now I have to steal.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I thought I was getting my life on track and now I have to steal because my family won't take me in because I'm right. a convicted felon. There's the system's broken because everybody's overwhelmed on it.
Right.
There's no secondary homes for me, you know, to transition to something else. Now the world's apparently ending and I don't know what right. information is out there. What else do I got?
Right.
Yeah.
What else do I got? I'm going to go steal a burrito and I'm going to go make things easier. I'm going to go make things easier. I'm going to talk to the person on the corner and say, like, hey, you pop me something and I'm going to mm-hmm. I'll make sure I can get some of this out too. And, you know, I'll pay you back on all of that. You know, just make it go away.
Right.
Yeah. You know, make it go away. And so it's that societal structure right now that we're in.
Right.
You know, that and that to me, it's not compassionate.
No. It's not.
It's not compassionate when California says we're releasing all of these criminals and everything else, and a majority of them end up as homeless and relapsed.
Right.
It's not solving the issue. It's way worse. And I know somebody who committed suicide through fentanyl.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. He committed suicide through fentanyl because of that process of like, it's just, I can't get clean. My family never wants to talk to me again. I'm begging for help. I'm begging for help. I know the last time I begged for help, I stole a lot from them. And
you know what it is to the addict, and I've been there. I was there on numerous occasions, especially in the last 2 years of my using. There are worse things than death.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you get to a point, and you know, and part of it, yeah, is the woe's me. Okay, woe's me, kind of a thing, right? But really, you get to a point in your addiction where you're looking at it and you're going, there really is no hope. There really is none. And by the way, I wasn't homeless. All right, I should have been. All right, but I wasn't. I still had a family. I still had the great house. I still had all that. And like I say, the only difference between the addicts that I deal with and the homeless people is that my addicts are sleeping in a better bed, mm-hmm. because there's no difference between the two. But there is a point where we call it the efforts,
yeah.
right? Where it's just like, you know what? I just don't care anymore. I can't physically do this anymore. I can't mentally do this anymore. I cannot get up and fight this thing another second.
And Foot, do you think you'd be here today if you were on your own and by yourself?
Never, never. And speaking of best friends,
I know
that was my best friend. Mm-hmm. You know the story,
mm-hmm.
okay? Yeah. So you don't give up on your best buddy.
Yep.
Okay? Because mine didn't. By the way,
I want to make sure he hears
this too. Don't get me started. Yeah. Okay. Because right? Because you know, best friends are key in this.
Yep.
All right? Yeah. Yeah. That
See, but that's you know, you're looking at but this the where we're at today in society, it's almost what, 70% of people don't know their neighbors?
Right.
You know, can't even ask your neighbor for sugar.
Right.
Yeah. When that used to be in a TV show.
And, yeah. Right.
You know, most people, you know, they'll sit on they get home and they go straight into their garage and they don't walk out.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and
Absolutely.
Now it's weird saying hi when somebody runs by and they're like, who is that guy?
Oh, I
did I know that person?
I get it in my neighborhood sometimes.
He was like, why are you waving at me? And it's like, I'm just waving at you. And I'm door knocking for my campaign and all of this other stuff.
That's got to be weird.
And they're like, well, what do you want? I was like, I'm your neighbor. I'm the one with the. I was like, I'm the one with the blue truck at the corner, and they like, oh, you got broken into a couple weeks ago. I was like, yes, I did. And it's like, you know, they open the door. It's like, well, one, I'm a little large, so I'm a very large human being.
It's not like you're not noticeable.
Yes,
right?
So it's like, I don't know if they could see me through the keyhole since I'm a.
When they look out the keyhole, they're looking right in the middle of the chest.
Yeah. Right? but it's like it's, you know, we look at that. It's like we've built structured society for us to be alone or just our own family and all that. And then if we were to lose that. I mean, truly, it's where I do lose
a lot
of help.
And to the addict, look, you know, loneliness. There's a great little acronym, and it's called HALT, and it means don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you're and that's an acronym for being when you're in sobriety, right? But when you're in your addiction and you're hungry, angry, lonely, and tired, that's dangerous. But it's also dangerous. Those letters when you're in recovery as well. But that loneliness piece, you do. You feel like you're the only person doing it. I used to drive around and look at people in other cars and go, this, look at this guy. He's not on his way to the doctor right now trying to get another script somewhere. You know, it's We have all these different things that are going on in our heads, and we can't seem to make sense out of any of them when we're in the middle of our addiction. Mm-hmm. You know, I call it the squirrel in the cage that just keeps, or the hamster in the cage that just keeps running on that wheel, right? And there's never an ending. There's never an escape. There's never a door out of. We're just doing this mm-hmm. and there are people out there that want to help. But David, our hands are tied. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, our hands are tied so much in this that why should we have to fight anybody over this? You said it in the beginning. Fentanyl has taken over this country. Leading cause of death, period.
Mm-hmm.
How are people not listening? How is that, again, it's California, it's my state. How are they not attacking this thing full bore? This is not a partisan issue.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just, to me, I just think it's a messaging. It's a messaging portion on, again, it's just where I look at where policies and society is right now is, you know, people need to hear who cares about them.
Yeah.
And right now they just have a thought that one side over the other actually cares about them. Yeah. And that's what they say, like, oh, this, you know, look, they understand me because of, you know, these conditions, and they're saying the things that I want to hear. I'm going to say the things you don't want to hear, because
right.
I'm going to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Right.
That, look, it's not okay. I understand you went through some hard stuff in life, you know? It happens. Yeah. I went through hard stuff in life. You went You went through hard stuff in life. And it's not okay to just fall victim and say, like, life happened to me. I'm okay to use.
Right.
I'm okay to abuse.
Right.
I'm okay to do this, because it's that. But we also have to create communities again.
Right.
You know, neighbors should know neighbors.
Right.
People should be able to say, it's like, hey, you need sugar. If there's something that's going on at your house, let me help you out. Let me help build a fence for you.
Right.
You know,
right.
We've got to get back to that. And that's where it's a big project of mine when I'm running for the state assembly and get there, is I want to be in every single one of the counties that I represent. And I want to have community roundtables where business owners come and they work with each other. And where, right. hey, if somebody's working, you know, the people that we should first trust are our neighbors.
Right.
You know, and we've allowed the government to now circumvent where the church was really at, mm-hmm. where, you know, church and communities, you know, regardless of which religious ideology you belong to, your church should be some of the first people that you go to when you need help and you need food and you need different things, not the government.
Right.
Because they can say, like, oh, hey, you know, I'm going through it. And it's the church is what saved me and my family when we
sure.
used to wait in the food lines all the time. And, you know, my mom would, and it's, she's an amazing, special, special woman. She would always tell us, you know, you may be the poorest Americans, but you're the richest Tongans.
Yeah.
Yeah, she would always say that. She'd always say, you may be the poorest Americans, but you're the richest Tongans, because in Tonga right now, there's nobody giving you a box of food. There's
right.
no pastor that sponsored you for Christmas, you know, to buy you
right.
these gifts and shoes and all this other stuff. And you worry about the holes in your shoes, but you know your cousins don't have shoes.
Right.
You know, they just... You know, and she was like, the reality, she's like, look, we got a small home here and there's a whole bunch of us and it's beat up and all of that. I was like, you know, your cousin's home blew down in a typhoon.
Right.
You know, and they don't have electricity a majority of the day. If you have electricity for all of the days throughout the hours of the day, you're pretty close to the 1% in the world.
Really?
And, you know, my mother made, if I think the stat is like, if you make $32,000 a year in US dollars, you are 1% in the world. You know, and we have all these individuals right now that are talking about, oh, look at the people who make over $450,000. That's the 1%. Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. You just don't have, you're just stuck in your silo of America.
Yeah.
Because that's just a silo of America, because the 1% of the world makes less than $32,000.
Right.
Well, the 1% of the world makes over $32,000, and everything else is below that. And we can't just see through, you know, some of these things.
Yeah,
and
right.
it's like, I'm blessed that my mother, you know, had the church wrap their arms around me, you know, and she made sure that, you know, we weren't hanging out with some of our family members that were in gangs and all this other stuff. And she put us in, you know, I was a Royal Ranger. I don't know if anybody knows what that is. It's like the Boy Scout version, but in the church, so it was one of those. And, you know, people, and it's funny, I think back to, like, people would sponsor us for all of this and how much she did, you know, hey, I'm going to take you to the pool because I'm going to make sure that you're not out hanging out on the streets with, you know, anybody else. My mother was, and one, she's a Polynesian lady. She's stronger than me right now. So she's, because she's purebred Polynesian and I'm half breed. So she's got that Polynesian,
that's,
you know,
perfect.
Strength.
Yeah,
she made sure. And so, but it's like, I think about
that's
that,
cool.
creating that community again, where the community, she would do that for our, you know, she.
Asian lady sounds
even
like.
When we would wait in the food lines and get the food, she would then make us work the food lines, because she was like, you're not getting this for free, you're working too.
Okay.
Oh yeah,
wow.
she made us volunteer at everything.
I like her already.
I loved that she did that, because there was nothing that made me feel better when I could see somebody who's going through the same thing as me. Hey, here's some food.
Yeah.
You know, and there's another little kid and they go, you know, they're 12, I'm 12, and they're like, can I help? Yeah, let's help. Let's do this together.
Yeah.
You know, like, let's not depend on Sacramento and let's not depend on California. Let's take care of our area.
Right.
You know, and if we can keep doing that, and I look at it from there's 58 counties in California. If each county can really be you know, where we can find community individuals. I think about, you know, pain here. I think about the rescue mission. I think about, you know, breaking the barriers. Mm-hmm. These individuals didn't need government to come in and say, hey, here it is. So let's empower them.
Right. But I will add this. I'm glad you said that. Because empowerment, that word needs to cover a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
Needs to cover a lot of ground. Because I think one thing we, and just not me, but we in the nonprofit world, you know, people just think that money falls from the sky. And, you know, oh, you're a nonprofit, you shouldn't be charging for this. Or you're a nonprofit, oh, gosh, you must have just, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank. You're getting funded all over the place. That is not the case. That is not the case. In fact, very few of us are funded by any government money whatsoever. We're mostly funded by private donations and private foundations. Mm-hmm. You know, the government has a tendency to send that money. I'm just going to say it, and I may get in trouble for this because I'm used to getting in trouble, okay?
Because people don't want you to tell the truth.
Because people don't want me to tell the truth. But when you have millions of dollars being funded into our own Fresno County here from Sacramento, that money just gets swept up in their system. It doesn't really go for things. I mean, can you imagine if somebody, if the state of California dumped $6 million in our lap here at Payne, do you know what we could do with that money?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. We could totally, I'm going to say it out loud, we could kick anybody's ass out there in program services.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and $6 million is nothing what the state gives to these counties and these county-run programs. I'm on a mission this year to find out where that money is mm-hmm. going, what it is being used for, and I'm going to get some answers here. Okay, I'm going to get some answers. We need those answers because it's time to call people to the mat on this thing, right? And I'm not saying people are crooked. That's mm-hmm. not what I'm saying. Okay, it's just where's the best avenue for that money to go?
Yep.
Yeah. We need sober living homes. We need transitional living homes here. If I had $6 million, I mean, my God, it wouldn't even. I mean, it would take so much less than that, okay, to get four or five of them going. Anyway, I can just go off.
No, but you're. And that's where I look at it from the root cause of it. You know, is who's, and it goes back to the beginning of the conversation. Who's in charge in California?
Right.
You know, and it's really isn't the. You know, when I talk about with Fresno County too, most of these programs are. County is just a pass-through entity.
Right.
You know, they're saying like, hey, we're sending the money. You have to allocate it. It's already, you know, streamlined. You just have to go through it from there.
Right.
You know, and that means the root cause here is our, you know, we have to get newer people into the legislature. You know, and look, the reality of it is California is getting everything that Californians voted for.
Absolutely they are.
Californians are getting everything that they voted for, but that just means that well, I look at it on my side of things, and if I'm against some of these things, I have to do a better job. I have to look internally on our side of politics, on my side of politics, and say, how do I message better so that people are informed with exactly what they're voting for?
Right.
You know, we're all, again, we already know fentanyl's a bad thing.
Right.
Okay? This is how we take care of it. Let's vote on it. Because that accountability is, it should always be held accountable mm-hmm. by the voters. You know, and so it's hard to have that conversation because how does somebody go, oh yeah, I voted for that. That's my fault.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because we've already talked about it. You know, the accountability on that doesn't happen.
Right.
You know, if you drop the ball, you drop the ball.
Right.
You know, but it's hard for people to say, yeah, I messed up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just getting to that. And it's where I tell everybody, it's like, look, we messed up because we thought it was the altruistic thing to do.
Sure.
You know, when we voted on Prop 47 and the headline said, was it safer neighborhoods and cleaner schools?
Right.
Or clean neighborhoods and safer schools?
Right.
You know, that was just the name of it. But what it really did was move what a felony was to, you know, felony robbery and theft to $950.
Right.
and, you know, made a misdemeanor on a lot of this and didn't allow DAs and different things to prosecute.
Right.
You know, and where's the money on that?
Right.
You know, that's, you know, it's just, it's why it's, I have such a big passion on getting back to civic engagement. And I mean, I talk to my community about it all the time. I talk to Polynesian people, you know, and different ones. And I just say that. I was like, look, why we don't have the cleanest roads but the highest taxes baffles me. And it's not because of my side of politics. We're a glorified advisory board,
right,
you know, because there's only 18 Republicans in the assembly, and there's only eight. There's 18 out of 80.
Yeah.
18 out of 80. And there's eight senators on the Republican side out of 40 in California. Right. I was like, so we're more of a glorified advisory board.
Sure.
Then we are policymakers because we can't move anything without that. And so if we can't move anything without that, we also can't get any of the blame.
Right.
Yeah. We can't.
Right.
I mean, you can't. Like I said, if I was in Ohio, if I was in Texas, I know who to blame.
Right.
Because I know where the supermajorities are.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the reality of it. If we're the fifth largest economy in the world and we have rolling blackouts, you know, I know who to blame.
Right.
You know, if our food costs here are higher than in Iowa's and everywhere else across California and we grow it, I know who to blame.
Right.
You know, and but I know who to blame. And that's a messaging and a marketing thing that we just need to inform some of the voters and say, like, look, you can hang your hat on, you know, which ideology you want to believe in, or you can hang your hat on which one produces results.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, and we've tried this for over 20 years now. Like, you okay if we change managerial, you know, duties? Are you okay if we, mm-hmm. you know, kind of shake up the little beehive a little bit and just say, like, look, let's just do some things different, you know, because however you want to look at it, I challenge everybody, like, who's looking to be the best Californian?
Yeah.
You know, and the competitive side in me always says, I'll race you to the top.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's what I want to be. You can identify me as whatever you want to identify me as, but I want to be the best Californian. I want people to know that my goal is, one, keep the lights on in California. Because can we just get to that?
Right.
It's like when I say a brighter future for California, I mean,
literally,
like,
mean
physically,
that.
The lights will stay on when it's hot outside.
Right.
You know, and that's the challenge that we just need to get back to people. And if, as long as we can show them that truly we care about them, and there is a mission and there's a plan and we're exposing. And so that's where I tell people, right now we're in a position where it's education and exposure. We have to educate people on what are the issues.
Right.
People know fentanyl is an issue and all of that. And now we have to expose why it's still going on.
Yeah.
And then you can get to implementation, and then you can get to execution. And it's going to take a long time.
Right.
You know, it will. Because you can't just say, like, hey, let's, you know, I wish, I mean, for somehow Argentina literally just flipped immediately because they just elected, what is it? Javier or something. He's new president.
Yeah, he's
and he's out there. Yeah. But you know, that doesn't happen as often. You know, because it just had to get so bad.
Right.
You know, I want to make sure it doesn't get that bad.
Right.
But we could do it right now by just simply talking to people and just saying, like, hey, here's exactly why we're seeing retail theft. Here's exactly why we can't put fentanyl dealers away. Here's exactly why it was a struggle to pass child sex trafficking laws. You know, here is it. Now I'm going to expose you to the people protecting these individuals, and now I'm going to ask you to help me make the changes.
So let me ask you this. So do you believe also in exposing governmental agencies that do the same?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Well, it's more of, hey, look, and it's, I do it from a sense of, like, look, I don't need to call anybody out. I don't need to say anything. I just need to follow the numbers and the dollars.
Right. Yeah.
And if I look at the dollars and it shows, like, hey, look, California has 50% of the, you know, they say unsheltered and homeless are different, which is kind of weird because they're just playing the numbers. But 50% of the homeless live in California, 50%. Right. And so I look at a results base.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like playing football. Mm-hmm. You either produce on the field or you're the second string the next week.
Right.
You know, and that other person either produces and then they go. And so we're not at a point right now where it's like, hey, you tried, you failed. Let's have that hard conversation. We have to do something different.
Yeah, we do. And I'm just going to give
all agencies, everything
else. Right. I'm going to give just one example because, and again, I'm not going to mention any names here today, but, you know, but there's an organization in a certain county here in Fresno that literally, their salary-based organization is 92% of their total budget goes to salaries and compensations. and less than 4.2% goes towards program services. And I've seen the numbers. I mean, I've seen them. Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah.
Why? But the bigger question is, why hasn't anybody called them on it yet? And in this county, they cannot even do, they can't even service the citizens of this county properly. Even if somebody is court ordered into something, there are numerous waiting lists. Why?
And the problem isn't that they're underfunded either.
That is not the problem. When you, and again, I have no problem in people making livings and making good livings. But when you are, you know, when your revenue is in the $4 million to $5 million a year range, and out of that, you're spending whatever, again, 92%, 93% on salaries as opposed to program services, and that's money coming from the state of California to these people, there's something wrong with that picture. And how can a county allow that to go on for as long, at least what, 22 years now? And nobody says a word. Well, that's ending.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd love to look at the numbers on that too.
And I'll give them to you.
There's individuals that I know that are, you know, we have really good representation here.
I know.
You know, and that's where I know that there are people who are truly fiscally responsible. And we, I mean, we're at a breaking point right now. We know how hard 2024 is going to be.
Right.
We're in a triage period because it's an election year. So.
Right.
You know, but we have to have those hard conversations. We're not in a position right now where we can kind of meander around.
Yeah, those days are over.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, people are dying.
Yep.
There's no money. Right. It's all running out. You know, and honestly, like my belief is that we're in this kind of lull period. You know, the money from COVID and all this other stuff that, you know, all of the printing, it's all starting to run out very quickly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very, very quickly. And it's where, I mean, programs are going to have to be cut significantly. You know, significantly. Mm-hmm. And then not only that, I see a lot of the issues that's happening with here in the Valley and in the central area. I mean, we're losing Wawona now. Mm. You know, Wawona is the largest peach packing facility in America.
Right.
You know, and they just had an announcement on this past Monday that they're going to lay off over 5,000 workers.
God, it's just horrible.
You know, and it's like, that's an amazing family too, who takes care of this area. Yep. And but they're going through some of the same issues. And if, and it's where I look at these markers. You know, we've already see what's happening with Bitwise. Right. Bitwise ran out of their grant funding and that thing imploded.
Right.
You know, they're not the same as Wawona, but Wawona's going through, you know, just the economic hardships on when it comes to labor costs and everything else.
Right.
And, you know, the acquisition that they made back in 2018 and all these things, in addition on the pricing on food and commodities, and the global market was really hurt a lot of people. I mean, the amount of businesses we lost during COVID.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, all of this stuff.
Right.
You know,
to this day, I don't know. I don't know how some of us survived.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's you know, you want to talk about the grace of God? I mean, there it is.
Yep. Yep.
Because it was a nightmare.
And, you know, that back funding is pretty much gone.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the writing's on the wall. $98 billion surplus in 2022-2023 fiscal year. Potential 32, 68, or $110 billion deficit.
Right.
In California. 2 years later.
Right.
2 years later.
Thank you, Governor Newsom.
Well,
we'll say it. You don't have to say anything.
Yeah, but that's it's just more of it's that accountability issue.
Correct. Yeah. He'll cut that.
Yeah. It's that accountability issue that I'm just running again to bring back accountability.
Yeah.
Let's put the money. Let's make sure that we're investing in our future when it comes to the kids. Let's make sure that taking care of truly data-driven policy,
right?
You know, that not only holds dealers accountable, but provides the services that are necessary.
Right.
Necessary. You know, you can be the cool parent, and you can have the cool parent policies. You know, but somebody's going to die, and we can't be cool parents in a time that is as hard as it is today.
Correct.
You know, we need to do the things that are necessary. Let's look at the data. Let's look at what works in other states. Let's look at what works in other countries.
Right.
You know, and if it shows time and time and time and time and time again that these are the markers. I just want to be backed by data science and everything else. I don't need to recreate the wheel. I don't need to do anything like that. We just need to get back to the basics.
Right.
That's what I'm. That's why I'm running.
And that's why. That's why we got you on here, man.
Yeah.
You bet, David. Thank you so much. Absolute pleasure.
Yeah.
You're a good man.
Thank you.
And you're gonna do well in this. And we wish you nothing but the best, man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that.
Yes, sir. And we thank you for listening, of course, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And if this is your first time, hit that subscribe button. Also, leave us a rating and a review. Or if you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. Make sure you have all alerts on. I love that bell sound effect, Flint. That's just my favorite. And you will be alerted every time Payne releases content on the YouTube channel.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call Payne, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at paynonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Payne Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to Payne, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.